Boston.
You're in Columbia. You're in Columbia too.
Yeah, I'm right. here. I'm here.
Oh, Columbia University, not Columbia.
Oh, Columbia.
Columbia with a U.
Yeah, the one with the U. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not the one you're in. Although I was just listening to another show, and I think it was that Underworld podcast that I'm so obsessed with. And they were talking about how shocking it is, like, the number of people going, flocking to Columbia now who don't know how to spell it, you know?
You can buy a hat here that says it's with an O, not a U.
Yeah, I would imagine that's something that they have to remind people. I think the overall point this podcast was making was that the kind of tourist that is now attracted to Columbia recently has kind of changed, and it's become much more of a playground for especially American and English tourists, it sounded like, and not in a good way, you know.
But not in Bogota. They go to Medellin or Cartagena.
I think this podcast, and maybe we can just link to this in the show notes, this was talking about Medellin specifically, and it was about a lot of it was about the drug tourism, about sex tourism, and it was just sort of like things kind of going south there, right at a time when Medellin was kind of booming as far as the tourism industry there. But Ryan, I wanted to say up top, in case we sound a little different in this episode, it's because producer Amanda and I are at the actual studio at Columbia University. Ryan is not. Ryan's still south of the border somewhere. I've given up trying to track his travels.
I'm at a WeWork in Bogota where there's no trouble to be had.
Are you actually at a WeWork?
Yeah.
Okay. I was going to say
work almost every day.
I knew you did a lot, so I figured there was a good chance you were at one today. I didn't know if you were just plugging them or what. But yeah, since we last spoke, Ryan, a lot going on in the world, like natural. They're not really disasters, I guess, in the case of the eclipse, but we had the earthquake here. And well, that one wasn't a disaster either.
So there were no disasters.
No disasters, but weird natural occurrences, I guess. Lining up in a way that if I were a little more paranoid, I'd be tempted to say was kind of spooky.
You and Marjorie Taylor Greene, you have the same grasp of
I know
the physical sciences.
That's right. Yeah, I was trying to get my head around how the moon can come between two bodies that are flat. Yeah. You know, they're...
I call that the two body problem.
Very good. Always topical, Ryan. And speaking of, we also had 50 years of People magazine, which I think both you and producer Amanda dropped into the chat to congratulate me on in a way that I feel I don't deserve any part of, but sure.
50 years of bringing, the important Royals news and latest in Hollywood gossip. So thank you, Michael.
Yeah, I mean, and the Royals, that stuff is out of control recently. They're all over the...
There aren't that many Royals left, from what I can tell.
They're all about to drop like flies.
It's a dangerous job.
Yeah, apparently. Well, I mean, you got, like, the bad genes going into it. It's just...
Yeah.
Yeah.
At some point, you should have non-cousin marriage in your lineage.
Yeah,
just
right.
Occasionally.
Oh God!
That the Eastern Shore of Maryland and the Royals could both
take a lesson from.
Mike and I are from the Eastern Shore of Maryland, so we can make that joke.
Yeah, we're allowed to make these jokes.
What are you talking about, Shelbyville? Why would we want to marry our cousins?
Because they're so attractive.
Amanda, did you read Jesus Son since we last convened?
You know what? I didn't. I got sidetracked. It's on the coffee table.
Okay, well, don't read it until you can read the whole thing. Like, until you have... And that only takes a couple hours. I mean, this isn't like... Ryan's laughing because I think we should probably clarify that I'm talking about the Dennis Johnson book that's only, I don't know, 100 pages, if that. It's a really slim volume, so it actually can be read in one sitting. And I would argue should be. Ryan, you need to read that too, and I need to reread it.
I've just seen the film with, is it Hottie Billy Crudup? I think it's Hottie Billy Crudup.
Yeah,
in the film,
and
yeah.
Jack Black, I think, in that as well, which I remember being good. But I think this is a case where the book is clearly the superior.
We're on the side of the book almost always being better on this podcast.
Almost always, with rare exceptions. I think
like Gone Girl is a good exception.
the movie being better. I never read the book, so I can't write.
No,
say.
But you wouldn't. It's like kind of cheesy genre fiction, but in the hands of David Fincher, it's
yeah. Although I wouldn't, I wouldn't say that's one of his best albums.
I think it's a perfect movie. I've rewatched it.
That's so funny.
I mean, I also think that Ben Affleck has never looked better than in Gone Girl. It's like,
oh, interesting. He's not that young there, so that's
well, he looks great. That gives, he's
gives
Ben
us, no, that's great. That gives us hope. Those of us who have just hit the age of 40 and are watching ourselves, you know, succumb to gravity.
Midlife Ben Affleck is much better looking, I think.
Well, he got his teeth fixed. Young Affleck had those, you know, had the teeth that were kind of a mess. So
wasn't that just for the movie, so he could pretend to be working class for like?
No, I'm pretty sure he really like. I think what you're seeing now is for the movies, and he got the veneers. But if you look back at like Chasing Amy, even when he's the leading man in that, but he still hadn't had his teeth fixed. So, and I'm not ripping on him for having bad.
My dentist told me I need to have work done before I can get veneers. I'm just like, all right, I'm just gonna die with these teeth. God bless Joe Biden. You know, he's willing to put the work in.
My religion is you. My religion is you. Help me, man, now
show me your back. Help me, man, now show me your back. So this episode, I know I had promised an episode on sentence variety, and we are going to get to that. But today kind of, I think, is going to turn into what other shows might call a cleaning out the computer episode. Here, I just went back over our text thread for the past, I don't know, 6 months or something. And there's all these ideas that probably weren't enough on their own to sustain a full episode, but
I've seen you work magic, Mike.
Yeah, well, there's that on here. We've talked about Jesus Son by Dennis Johnson and 100 Years of Solitude, which I think we could make like a summer reading project if we wanted to do that.
Excellent book. I think I'm going to finish it today. And look, there's a lot of variety in the sentences there. That guy can write.
He's kind of known to be a master. Yeah.
It's one of those books, though, that you read and it's like, you know, how much of this magic is in the translation? Like, I just read the most recent Crime and Punishment translation and it was excellent. And I'm like, well, how different is this in, you know, in Russian? And I'm not Pete Buttigieg, so I'm not going to learn Russian just to read Crime and Punishment, but
right,
yeah, shout out to translators,
and that can make a huge difference. I mean, we've talked before about that kind of being make or break between different editions of books that we really like. There was also we touched briefly on the Tricia Romano book on The Village Voice. I mean, mostly so that I could kvetch a little bit about not being interviewed for that. She had this section on the last years of The Voice, and a couple of my coworkers are quoted in there, one of them in a really funny way.
Did my dear old friend who's now passed away, Michael Feingold, did he get a chance to be interviewed before?
I can't remember if he... I have to confess that I haven't read the whole thing yet. I flipped right to the last section.
I don't read any book I was interviewed in either, so that's fair.
I actually flipped right to the index first and looked for my own name. but yeah, I only so far have read the chapters on... Or I think it's really just one chapter on the time that I was there. And I don't think Feingold was in... You know, maybe he was, because we considered him for the final cover, the last ever print issue of The Village Voice, and I would have voted for his cover. They did all the art for it. It was a photo of him, and I thought it was great. I would have picked that one, but I was eventually outvoted. So maybe he is quoted in there. He's definitely in the book elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, he was a big part of the, you know, for folks who don't know, Michael Feingold was the head theater critic for The Voice for 150 years or something.
Yeah, so it would be borderline irresponsible to have a book about The Voice and not have him in there. Michael Musto too, I think. I'm sorry, it was Michael Musto who the final cover.
Yeah, I was gonna say, yeah, not, I love not Feingold, but Musto makes more sense for the final cover.
I get those two confused because they had both left The Voice by the time I was there and then eventually were rehired to write a column, so I never met them in person, but I edited them.
Was the final cover just the the VC folks who destroyed the magazine, or what?
Should have been just a portrait of our owner at the time.
Burning cash.
Just setting books on fire. But yeah, I was a little salty that she didn't interview me. I mean, I guess I can out myself here. I never really tried to keep this much of a secret, but I worked in a little acrostic puzzle into the last bit of editorial text ever in the Village Voice. Also, the Village Voice does exist now, so it was what we thought at the time was the last ever print edition before they switched to online only, and then eventually died. So anyway, my point being that I would have had a decent story to tell Trisha Romano about that last issue had she called me, but I don't know.
How many advertisements for massage parlors were in the very last edition?
Well, I mean, her book, there's a lot of it given over to the back page. If you want the hot gossip on that, there's plenty of that in there for sure. And, you know, when I say it exists now, I haven't seen I know that there are physical copies somewhere of it, but I haven't seen a box in I don't know how long. And it occurred to me the other day that I was on the bus and I saw the lady next to me was reading a physical copy of a newspaper. I think it was AM. And it occurred to me that I hadn't actually seen that in a while. Someone with a physical copy of anything, like, open and out on either the subway or the bus. You know, it had just... And this is going to sound weird, but before I saw that she was reading a physical newspaper, I swear I smelled the newsprint first. It was like, it had been that long since any of that was sort of in my orbit, you know?
Yeah. I'm looking at the website right now. You're right. It does exist. I didn't know that it still existed.
Yeah. I've written for them in the past couple of years. It's Bob Baker is still there, who's great. So I wrote a piece for him.
They seem very anti-Trump from the front page. I don't know if that's a
shocking.
Theme.
That's not the Village Voice, I know. I mean, they were really the Voice was really the first to kind of expose him when he was, you know, when he was a regional player in New York before he kind of became a national name. And I'm sure there's relevant columns we could link to there.
They refer to the art of the deal as Trump's Mein Kampf.
The difference is Hitler probably actually wrote Mein Kampf. There's no ghostwriter, and yeah, he was in prison at the time.
Hopefully we'll get Trump's prison book at some point.
You might have the time coming up.
I'll myself, I'll to me. I'm the crowd who's out to change our history. I'll myself raise your hand. There's no greater dictator in the land. Everything I do for you.
Ryan, I know, and this may have been my stupidest and silliest idea that I popped into the chat, but there was a point where I wanted to do a whole episode on words that you could type with one hand.
Yes, I remember that.
I think actually the bigger idea there was going to be like little things throughout your workday that you can take pleasure in. And I mean,
wow.
I'm sure
that's a view into Mike's mind. Mine's like, you know, getting to have the third cup of coffee, you know. Yours is, can I write this word with one hand?
Well, so see, yours is still sort of a sensory thing, though. Like yours is, I was going to say that there could have been something a little higher minded in there, like getting to work on extremely well-written pieces of writing.
Right.
But no, my mind immediately went to this like tactile thing. But that said, I really do find a lot of pleasure in that, you know, when you get to keep one hand on the mouse and the other hand. So this is
the mouse?
Well, trackpad. I still call it a mouse. Yeah.
Wow. Well, imagine the same setup you had to play Duke Nukem in 1997.
Yeah, I still have the scuzzy mouse with the actual ball in it. Yeah. No, I still call it a mouse the way like my parents still call it taping a TV show. Rather than recording or TiVo or whatever other term.
Your parents are still TiVoing television?
Well, I mean, they had
a
TiVo.
A smart TV.
Well, they have that now, but although, is there their TV now, their smart TV might be a TiVo smart TV. I don't know. They'll have to let me know what they're on now. But my point is TiVo would make more sense because that's the more recent term for right. what they're trying to express. Tape is going back to an obsolete technology. But I think we all understand what they mean when they say tape. And that I don't think that's unusual for people of their age. Sorry, mom and dad, to say that.
You know, I had a tape thing well into the 2010s because my friend Jeffrey and I would go to the Salvation Army and force ourselves to buy a $1 used VHS tape and watch it that day, no matter what it was. So we saw things like Brewster's Millions and a lot of Eddie Murphy from the 80s. But it was a fun challenge because it was movies you would never watch if you had the unlimited resources to watch any movie.
Right. You'd never stop on that on Netflix and actually choose it. Although those are
a good little film.
I was going to say those are less obscure titles than I might have thought you were going to say there. Like when you're digging through those bins and you find stuff that is just
I think
totally
once
forgotten.
We had to watch Pauly Shore's Jury Duty.
Oh my God.
That actually was painful. I
had that on tape at a certain point, but it wasn't, I didn't buy it. I taped it off of whatever.
I bought it for $1. So.
Yeah, you can't be too mad at yourself for that. I'm surprised though, that one didn't hold up. Isn't that Tia Carrera also in that?
Did not hold up, no.
Am I wrong about that? Is she in that from Wayne's World?
I don't. You're the right. You probably still have a Wayne's World framed movie poster in your bedroom.
Oh, I have a friend I still quote Wayne's World with pretty much daily, I would say. I might be confusing Jury Duty with a different Pauly Shore movie that co-starred Tia Carrera.
It's easy to do. Thematically, there's a lot of similarities.
You're saying there wasn't a lot of range in Pauly Shore's comedy work from the early 90s?
Not a ton. Hey, but wasn't that... No, that was Paul Rubens who had that great comeback in Blow.
Yeah, great.
Pauly Shore's never... Pauly Shore hasn't had his dramatic his return to the cinema yet.
Didn't I see him in something recently though? I remember being surprised to see him in something. Maybe it was just
he in Oppenheimer? He was one of the physicists.
He's one of the physicists. Yeah, but he's one of the idiots who thinks it's a wave and not a particle. Like, so he's immediately dispensed with in the movie.
Watch things on VCR.
Ryan, speaking of Jury, though, another thing I'd made note of, or that this wasn't something that I had dumped into the chat. This is something that came up organically, if I recall correctly. We had a little debate on Jury Rig, J-U-R-Y, versus Jerry Rig, J-E-R-R-Y, and which one is correct. And turns out to not be the one that you might think.
I was shocked at this. I wish I could delete this from our text chain because when they write the big history of this podcast, they're going to mock me for this
one. And well, I mean, I've looked this up more than once and still got it wrong. It's just one of those that doesn't stick for whatever reason. Maybe it doesn't quite come up enough that I need to have it kind of filed away properly in my memory. But in any case, do you guys just want to read your part in the chat and we'll go through this as if we're
like a dramatic reading of the chat?
Yeah,
Amanda, you're first.
Okay.
And you can feel free to, if you want to leave out names that aren't germane to the discussion or whatever, Amanda, you know, you feel free to, you don't have to quote yourself exactly verbatim here.
Mike, we'll leave
you don't want to talk about this guy? I was ready to go.
Well, you can if you want. I don't think you say anything bad about him. It's just that I don't think the listeners need to know which editor you were referring to.
Well, which editor was correct about this that we thought was wrong?
Okay, so I guess we should say that. So the editor, Amanda, basically is asking me a question in the chat, in our group chat. And she's talking about an editor that Amanda and I work with who turned out to be right. But anyway, that's the context here.
So I said, in this podcast script, editor wrote, were you able to jury rig this in a coherent way? I always thought it was jerry rig.
Right. So Amanda thought it was J-E-R-R-Y. This editor had written J-U-R-Y.
And I immediately was like, idiot.
Yeah. And okay, so that would have been my... No, that wasn't quite my... So
Mike,
my...
you're breaking up the reading.
No, I know, I'm sorry.
Yeah. You can, yeah, Amanda... can you just read it without commentary?
This editor is very far from an idiot, by the way. I'm teasing.
Yeah. No, he's great. And he Amanda, I wrote, I think it can be either, but Jerry, J-E-R-R-Y, was the original term. We'll investigate.
Like German soldiers, right? Jury rig doesn't make any sense.
Oh, I always pictured like scaffolding.
And then I've Googled it and I say, it looks like they have slightly different meanings.
Jerry rig is like DIY with spit and thumbtacks, essentially, right?
Yeah, I think Jerry built might have been the earlier term. So anyway, there was a dramatic pause there while I investigated. So there a little time went by and then I went back and said, we are all wrong, all caps. Wow. Jury rigged is the older term by quite a lot. 1780s versus 1840s for Jerry built. Jerry rigged, J-E-R-R-Y, is the newest and likely came from blending the two. Jerry rigged doesn't show up until 1959, which is wild. Jury rigged, J-U-R-Y, comes from an otherwise obsolete sense of jury as an adjective. Now I'm going to read that now from Merriam-Webster. Jury, adjective, improvised for temporary use, especially in an emergency or makeshift, as in a jury mast or a jury rig. So we've got this otherwise sort of, it doesn't actually say obsolete in the dictionary, but I would say that you don't run across that very much. So that's where this comes from. And then I had finally written in the chat, and the final factoid, it's unclear where Jerry built, and by extension, Jerry rigged, came from. Presumably someone named Gerald who did shoddy work. So
the Germans had nothing to do with it.
Apparently not. I mean, it's, yeah, it just goes back to this otherwise disused form of the word jury as an adjective to mean makeshift. And then I guess we kind of blend, people may have misused one for the other, and that's where Jerry enters in the mid-50s. But yeah, the main thing there is that we had all gotten that wrong. And I think kind of for an understandable reason, like jury, you would think that J-U-R-Y and rigging a jury refers to a totally different thing. It doesn't refer to like, you know, shoddy or makeshift craftsmanship, but it's
what lawyers do on the regular.
It's what Trump is claiming. I mean, yeah, take your pick. But yeah, so it just harkens back to this older use of the word in a sense we're not real familiar with as an adjective. I did brunch with the judge we appearing before. Private villas only, I don't go near a resort. We want everything galore, and I just live galore. Which also kind of put me in mind of a discussion that I know we've had at some point on here, on our chat, about just desserts. And how many people get that wrong? Now, just dessert, I think most people would want to put a second S in and spell like the, you know, desserts, like an after-dinner treat. And so when someone gets their just desserts, that means that they get the whatever they've done, they're getting their comeuppance by way of this thing at the end. Like a dessert is at the end of a meal. This is putting a cap on this story, and they've gotten their comeuppance, and there you are. That's their just desserts. So it's understandable why people would do that, but it's wrong. That set phrase or collocation, whatever you want to call it, just desserts, that actually is a use of the word dessert as a noun with one S that is otherwise obsolete. It's pretty much limited. Maybe there are other edge cases where you would still find that. I'm struggling to think of one now. I think it's pretty much limited now to this set phrase, where it's the emphasis is on the other syllable. Normally, when you see D-E-S-E-R-T, you're thinking of a desert. This is the same spelling, but it's dessert. So it's the same pronunciation as the spelling with two S's. So you can see why this is all very confusing. But in this sense, that word dessert means reward or something deserved. And you can even hear how etymologically related those two things are, dessert and deserve. But this people get this wrong all the time. It's not helping anything that there are like a million bake shops and cake shops that are called just desserts, where they only sell pies or whatever. So
it's clever.
Yeah, it's a great pun, but I don't think people scan it as a pun anymore. That just looks like the proper set phrase because you're so used to seeing it on signage and stuff.
I wonder how many people named their bake shop that because they thought that was the actual term.
Thinking it's the actual, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's like a pun without quite meaning to pun.
It's also a great way to get diabetes if you're
just eating desserts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although I still have the occasional day, Ryan, where I just eat dessert. And I got to say, it's magical. Allow yourself one of those a month and just start.
One a month.
Maybe every couple months. Maybe one a quarter.
A chocolate sundae on a Saturday night. What a way to make an evening end right. The movie was fine. The dancing divine. Let's head for the drugstore at Maple and Vine.
I don't know that I need to go over. I threw this last thing in our Google Doc today because it is something that I threw into the chat, and I mean, maybe we could just put this out as a cattle call because I do want to get to this at some point. And it's the use of it's the possible overlap between the King James Bible and Shakespeare. And what I mean by that isn't that Shakespeare contributed to the King James Bible directly. I don't mean that he actually had anything to do with the composition of it.
No, he was like God. He wrote it from afar.
Right. He commanded it as like onto stone tablets. No, what I mean is that I hadn't realized how, what's the word, coeval, concomitant, those things were, the composition of the King James Bible and Shakespeare being at the absolute height of his game. I mean, I think that the
the funny thing to say, isn't it? Like, you know, not
height of his game,
at the top of his game.
Man, Shakespeare, he had bars for days. Yeah, I think if you look at the years there, the precise overlap is almost like King James Bible debuts at the same time as Hamlet. It's like it really is, and it's. I know it's funny to put things like that, but Shakespeare really was, I mean, starting around that time, like early 1600s until maybe mid 1800s, there are, even in semi-literate households, the only two books that you're going to find are the King James Bible and the complete works of Shakespeare. So he
the
really...
Folio.
Yeah. I mean, the complete works of Shakespeare and Francis Bacon and whoever else wrote his works with him. Right? but yeah, he really was that popular for that long, you know, and even among people who weren't part of the literati or weren't otherwise highly literate themselves. So my overall point being here that I'm really interested in how the popularity of Shakespeare may have influenced the composition of the King James Bible. And I'd really like to get someone on who can talk to us about that and drill down really precisely into the language there, because I think that's fascinating, or could be, or maybe there's nothing there. I don't know. But I think that's pretty much it as far as what I had for today. I know this is... gonna maybe feel like kind of a placeholder odds and sods episode. I don't know why I titled our Google Doc that. I'm not really sure. I think that's the title of an album by The Who that was a rarities collection. I may have that wrong. But anyway, it probably is a bit of a placeholder. Next time we'll get to this bigger, meatier thing I wanted to do about sentence variety, I promise.
I'm a little disappointed that there is no direct connection, though, because I had always heard that Shakespeare contributed to, you know, some of the more poetic portions of the King James Bible. But what we think now is that whoever did the King James translation was just a big fan of Shakespeare.
Okay, so this is something that's already been out there and has been debunked, because I just know nothing about it. I mean, it just occurred to me that these things are happening on the same timeline.
We know that he didn't actually do the translation. He was busy writing Hamlet, and he turned down a lot of extra work at that point. He wasn't doing freelance.
he wasn't an independent contractor.
He wasn't doing contract work at that point.
I wonder if his key card for the Globe Theater didn't work, because that's what I'm having happen at Columbia every time I try to come up here. And now they're like carding everyone at the university gates. My card doesn't swipe. Everyone looks at me in line like I'm some kind of weirdo trying to get on campus when I shouldn't be.
Yeah, well, you know what movie holds up? That is sort of the Shakespeare of our day, Tom Stoppard. Shakespeare in Love. I don't really mean he's the Shakespeare of our day. I'm kidding.
Did Tom Stoppard have something to do with Shakespeare in Love?
Didn't he write it?
Did he? I had no idea about that. Let's quickly look this up before we sign off for the day. He did. He co-wrote it. Yeah, co-wrote the screenplay. I did not know that. That's interesting. I know that's thought of as one of these movies, and probably rightly, that shouldn't have won the Best Picture. It was a year where there were, you know, stronger contenders. But I also haven't seen that since it came out, and I wonder if it's unfairly maligned today.
It's a good movie. It's legitimately really good. I don't know that it's... I forget what it beat out.
Well, it beat Saving Private Ryan, I think is the...
Yeah, but Saving Private Ryan is sort of cringe, you know, outside of the amazing stuff that he does with the battle scenes. plot of Saving Private Ryan...
Oh, you... Yeah, you
know,
well,
the bookends when Matt Damon falls on the ground and is like, did I do enough? You know, it's literally him just doing the...
I think that's kind of the... I was going to say, it's kind of the Spielberg problem where he has to tack on that like bit of hokey sentimental ending or bookend, yeah.
But also, Gwyneth Paltrow winning Best Actress instead of Kate Blanchett for Elizabeth.
I forgot that she
that was
won
insane.
For that. Yeah.
I mean, that her English accent was brutal.
To have stories acted for me by a company of fellows is indeed...
They're not acted for you, they are acted for me. And?
And I love poetry above all.
Above Lord Wessex.
And isn't, what's his name's in both those movies? Really handsome dude, Joe Fiennes, I want to say?
Joseph. Joseph Fiennes, yeah. Right? Yep. Brother of Rafe?
Is yes. That...
Brother, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I felt like, and then you see... I mean, after that, you see Rafe in a million things and Joseph in not very much at all. And I always was kind of mystified by that.
Yeah, Joseph was super cool in that 3-year stretch.
Yeah, and you're right that he had, I mean, really interesting look, too. I mean, he just had that. Yeah. Have you been watching this Baby Reindeer, either of you?
What?
Oh, my God, you have to watch. It's this limited series on Netflix. It's amazing. We just blazed through it this weekend, Kim and I. But the lead guy in that, who I guess is it's the story of a guy who has a stalker, like a dude with a lady stalker. I don't want to say too much about it beyond that, but it's based on this, I guess, a stage play that this guy had written and performed in, and now he's turned it into this miniseries. But he has a very Joseph Fiennes, like that kind of like lean, sort of wolfish, like they're all like nose and teeth. Kind of.
Does he have those piercing eyes, so Mike?
Maybe less so than Joseph. I mean, that's hard. I'm imagining Joseph now, and even the fact that I can recall exactly what that stare looks like tells you a lot. I mean, yeah, piercing right through to your soul.
I know. I'm gonna have to watch Shakespeare in Love again.
I'm gonna do that too. I think that we'll make that homework
along with
Jesus Son and 100 Years of Solitude and
keep
whatever.
Keep an eye out and see if he's scribbling little notes on the Bible throughout the.
Right. He's just cribbing turns of phrase from Psalms.
Well, until then, I'm Ryan Davis.
And I'm Mike Laws.
And this has been Red Pen.
A grammar podcast.
Red Pen is brought to you by the Columbia Journalism Review and is Mike Laws, my fabulous co-host and good buddy Ryan J. Davis, and super producer Amanda Derrick.
So everybody, listen and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, and leave questions for Mike on grammar right on the Apple Podcast app, and we can respond to those in a future episode. So many a man's soul and faith.
was there when Jesus Christ had his moment of doubt and pain. Made damn sure that Pilate washed his hands, sealed his fate. Pleased to meet you. Hope you guess my name. Oh, yeah. But what's puzzling you is just the nature of my game.